Welcome to a new episode of Fight Your Mindset podcast. I'm thrilled to share the interview I did with Brandon Voss. He is the president of the Black Swan Group, where his father, Chris Voss, former FBI negotiator, is also working. He's the CEO. And Brandon joined him writing the book, Never Split the Difference. And in this interview, we're talking about how to put the tactics into negotiation for business. Enjoy it, take notes, and have a good weekend. Welcome, Mr. Brandon Voss. I'm using Mr. It's cool to have you here.
I am happy to be on, man. Thank you for having me. I was excited to join you today, and here we are.
Yeah, I've been waiting for, I think I reached out to the Black Swan Group back in October, maybe. I'm not sure, October. I think we had something going on in November, but then like time difference and so on. So they were like, we don't want to, like, it's funny how you're using this, like not accusation order, but like being gentle, asking, we don't, this might make us seem foolish. And I was like, actually, I used it to negotiate to get some sell. Like, I was waiting for some salary from a job I had. So I used this in an email that were like the same tactics. And they're like, They're like, I don't want to seem like an idiot asking about it. But like, is it possible to get the payment in advance? And they were like, yeah, no problem. No, it's not out of line. And yeah, it works.
So wait, you mean to tell me that back in October, you used our tactical empathy skills on my staff?
No. They were using it. They used it on me. They used it on me. I was like, hey, I've heard that before.
Well, you were more than welcome to use the skills on my staff for the foreseeable future. Just putting that out there.
I used it as towards some of my former employees.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So you've been getting some reps in, huh? Getting some successes under your belt. Yeah. Huh? I like that.
Yeah, it's like, and of course, I listened to your father's book, Never Split the Difference.
And I've spoken with, that's a great, that book has done wonders for us. And I think, you know, it's cool to have been a part of the process.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, knowing that I contributed greatly to the success of that book is a pretty cool thing.
So I'm curious, like, how, I've been thinking about some questions. I was like, how was it growing up with your father being the FBI hostage negotiator? Like,
yeah, you know, and this is the reality is I should have been more prepared for this question because I get this question all the time. But you know, the reality is I'll be honest about it. And unfortunately, it's an answer that most people don't want to hear. And it's also kind of like, you know, it's not what you imagine, right? I've been a hostage negotiator. It must have been like this cool thing growing up and all this stuff. And it was cool. You know, don't get me wrong. There was some cool stuff. You know, when he could make it to like a career day when I was in grammar school, he was obviously the most popular parent. I think other parents like hated when a guy like this shows up, right? Because like, how do I follow the FBI agent, right? What do I do next? And I definitely got a chance to meet a lot of really cool government representatives, a lot of FBI agents that were doing great work at that time. And that aspect of it was very cool. Yeah. Now, the flip side is, if a guy's job is to travel internationally to save Americans that got kidnapped in various countries, he don't spend nearly as much time at home as he'd like to, right? Yeah. And so neither one of us got a chance to see each other as much as we would have liked, but we still had a good relationship, great father and son relationship. And then, you know, there was one football game that I was playing in high school, and my father was adamant, like as little as we got to see each other, he was always adamant about making it to my football games. And there was one game, it was a home game when I was still living in Jersey with my mom, and he flew in from like Iraq the night before to make the game. And then immediately after, right, I kind of got to wave to him in the stands as we're getting shuffled off the field, right? And and he was back on a plane, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles, making his way back to the Middle East immediately after the game was over. So it was cool. It was fun to see the awesome work that he did. Mm. And I think if he could do it all over again, he'd probably figure out a way to spend more time at home. But it was, you know, he was a guy that was needed, right? He's got important work to get done.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, like that's like how it should be. I can like picture myself, since I'm a father, I have a daughter, and I moved like I lived 3 hours away from her. Then I moved closer to be with her.
Yeah.
That's like, and I want to be there for her as much as I can. Like, even that's another side of the story, but like, yeah, another time. But still, like, it's so important. Like, she can always count on me. So like that. I think that's
that's a cool thing, man. How old is your daughter?
Four.
Four. Yeah, I'm a new father myself. We had a daughter last. Yeah, thank you very much. We had a daughter last year. She came to us the morning on Father's Day. So it was a great way to celebrate the first Father's Day. But to your point, and I know this is the same issue that my father struggled with when I was young, right? Wanting to be around your kids and watch them grow and be there to see, you know, different things. And fortunately, I'm in a place where I have the flexibility to structure my work life so I can spend more time doing that. So, yeah, I see why you moved closer to the little girl, right? You got to be around her.
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah. Yeah. So it's always good to like, I remember when I was talking with Derek Gaunt, I had him on last year and I wasn't aware that he was using the same tactics on me as he'd been using for his, but that's a part of his way of talking. So it was actually my teacher in jiu-jitsu. He told me it was very funny. Like it was pretty fun to listen because he was using the same tactics on you and I didn't catch it, but it was like this conversation as normal. But
yeah, Derek's an interesting one, man. He's, first of all, he's a great addition to our team. You know, if it was, but after Chris and myself, Derek was the first real lead instructor that we added to the Black Swan group. And his ability to add to our content and go out and perform at a high level was cool. But yeah, his experience in law enforcement and then what he's done for us at Black Swan, like that stuff is just ingrained in him. Like, I don't actually know if he has another way to communicate with people because it's constantly tactile empathy. And then what he's easy to talk to and he's got a very calm demeanor. Yeah. And so like, you never expected that he'd be using a tactic on you. But some of it is just old hat, right? It's just kind of the way he ticks.
I remember I was a bit afraid because I felt, I'm going to talk with a guy who's been dealing with hostages and like kidnappers, apparently.
There's an exercise. There's an exercise we do in our training. And for those of you that have seen the masterclass, you got a real, really short glimpse of it in the masterclass. But it's a hostage negotiation-based exercise where a hostage has an unknown number of, or hostage taker has got an unknown number of hostages, and he's barricaded in a bank. And one of us instructors will be the role player that's the actual hostage taker. And then we pick people out from the crowd to come interact with the hostage taker. And Derek is by far the best hostage taker. He's better than me and he's better than Chris for all the reasons that you just mentioned, right? Because he's got a certain demeanor about him when he comes into the room. And then you get into this exercise and he's screaming at you in the exercise. And it's just like, what do I do, right? People freeze up. They're like deer in the headlights. But, you know, he also wraps it into like, he's got great learning points that he wraps it up with. But we love running that exercise with Derek for all the reasons you just stated.
Oh, beautiful. I've started to use more and more of what I've learned from reading blogs. Like you're posting often when it comes to like, maybe it was you or Derek, when it comes to cold calling. So when I'm working with sales now, So I'm cold calling basically. So what I'm using is this. Is this a bad time? So this is my gentle approach, and that's the way I've been able to reach out to the customers I'm calling or prospects.
I love that. I'm so glad you brought that up, because especially from a sales position, you know, when it comes to like the top three most difficult things to do when you're in a sales seat,
yeah,
cold calling is in there somewhere, right? Whether it's first, second, or third, it's probably up for debate, but it's definitely in the top three. And so speaking to that the article that you brought up, I don't remember if it was an article that I wrote or that Derek wrote. You know, we always come together as a team and discuss like who we want to put on what articles and what content we want to deliver. So it very easily could have been either one of us. I guess it might have been me, just because I got the sales background, but who knows, right? But that said, the no-oriented question, the opening line, right? Have I caught you in the middle of something? That has been a game changer across the board in the private sector, you know, not just when it comes to sales cold calls. And right, because as you know, people want to do cold calls or they're telemarketers or whoever it is. And one of the first things out of people's mouth is, you know, do you have 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Do you have time to talk?
Yeah.
Can I speak to you about this right now? All yes-oriented stuff that leaves people wondering in their brain, okay, well, how much time are you going to soak up? If I do want to talk to you, do I want to talk about what you want to talk about, right? And then even if I have the time to spare, are you even the individual that I'd like to spend that time with, right? And then the last question is, how long are you going to keep me on the phone for? Because everybody, when everybody hears that I need 5 minutes of your time, Derek, and it's funny you bring Derek up. Derek's got a great line. He goes, nothing takes 5 minutes, right? That's what Derek likes to say. And we all hear that, and we're like, there's no way this is going to be 5 minutes. I'd love for you to keep me to 5 minutes, but there, I already know there's no way that's going to happen. And then instantly people are on guard. They're instantly defensive. But to your point, when you call up, did I catch you in the middle of something looking for a no-oriented response? It clears people's minds. There's something about being given the ability to say no to something that actually clears people's thought process out. And it's not jumbled by what we like to refer to as the inner voice, right? Or I like to say the little man on your shoulder. And so I love that. I'm so glad you brought that up. Another one, you know, it's now a bad time. Did I catch you in the middle of something? You know, even a short, like preemptive label, like clearly you're a busy person.
Oh, I love that one.
Did I catch you in the middle of something?
Yeah.
Right. And kind of doing that kind of 1-2 combo punch there as well.
I remember I was working for another sales company, and then we have this script, like reading like a robot. And I've been using the same one. Hey, this is same as when we were called. I love the one you brought up with going back to school when you're like, when I was a kid calling somebody, hey, it's Doug. Can I talk with whoever? And that one is just so basic. And when I read it, I was like, oh yeah, I love this, because it's so easy and to grasp. And I've also been using, okay, I'm a disturbing, but I'm not sure, maybe, but I feel that the one, is this a bad time? It's, but I have to like put it into the Norwegian language and so on, but it's working for me. And sometimes if I'm stressed myself, and then I read the one we're saying, you have to have the right mindset when you're calling. I've noticed when I don't have it, I easily get, what do you call, like not needy, but more like, I'm not prepared for it. So
That's another great point too, right? Like having the right mindset going in,
that's gonna
paint the picture for your entire interaction, which is why I'm glad when I jumped on, you're in such a great mood, right? Put me in a great mood. So you geared me up for the interview. But I mean, it really is a great point, because if you come in and you're thinking about, you know, the last sale that you didn't close.
Bender
or maybe you've had an interaction with this counterpart before, and it was a few months ago and it didn't go well. And you're carrying that baggage into the conversation with you. The chances of you slipping up and doing a poor job are extremely high, exactly to your point. And that's one of the things that's great about the no-oriented question. You know, not only are you clearing their head, but you're putting yourself in a place that can be trusted.
Yeah.
Because the people that actually go for yes, right? Those are the sleazy sales guys.
Yeah.
That, you know, the snake oil salesman nobody likes to deal with. They go for yes.
Yeah.
And when we start doing it, they mentally put us in that category. So that there's so many elements to that too. And then one more point I'll add in, just going back to the no-oriented question, because I know if you're listening to this, you're probably wondering what a lot of people do. What if I call them up and I say, did I catch you in the middle of something or did I catch you at a bad time? Yeah. And they don't say no. They actually say yes. Like, what do you do then, right? What if you don't get the intended result and somebody says yes to you? And that's another great thing about the intention that not only a good mindset and a good no-oriented question opener provides, because their mindset has been cleared due to the nature of the question, even if they say yes, they have a tendency to follow up with implementation.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, yes, I am, but Dad, call me back in 2 hours.
Yeah.
I can give you half an hour in 2 hours if you call me back. Or let me put you in touch with my assistant and then she can get you on the phone so we can schedule something for next week. I mean, what's been your experience with that? Like, have you run into a yes when you said, you know, did I catch you at a bad time and you got a yes? Like, what happened?
Yeah, I've had them you actually called me in a bad time. This is a real bad time. But give me a call later. And then, like, I waited for a day or two. And then I said, and then I asked again, like, did I call you in a bad time? Like, did I catch you in a bad time? And they were like, no, now it's actually good because last time, and like we were on it, and then I presented okay, this is what I want to do, and like how does this look? And suddenly, yeah, I have to like, I hate bragging about myself, but it works. Like, that's
so I was gonna say, please do. The listeners, I'm sure, want to hear about you having success. Yeah,
but it's actually funny because like the times that I've been using this approach. I was reading just like a short, what do you call, like a stepping to the side. I was reading Robert Cialdini's book on persuasion. Jiu-jitsu, I think he's using jiu-jitsu, and I train Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So I'm using same terminology, because like when you're setting up a rear naked choke, you have to like be a bit sneaky, like gentle, and then let them slip a bit, and then you go for it, like just take your time. So I'm taking my time. So I've, of all the like companies I've called, and like I've managed to have like success with, like, I think, yeah, it works. So
that's pretty cool. That's very cool. And you know, and so I can't help myself. I apologize ahead of time because I'm going into coaching mode here a little bit. I can't help but do that, okay. Right? It's part of my job. So just going back to your example where the guy turned you down and said, call me back later.
Yeah.
And then you still had a very fruitful conversation with him anyway. Again, I think that speaks to the mindset you put him in.
Yeah.
Because even just, let's say he was puffing, or he was outright lying the first time you called when he said, I can't talk right now.
Oh, I've had a few times.
Maybe he's kicked his feet up and he's actually watching, you know, SportsCenter or something, right? He's watching soccer on TV. He's watching a little football. And but what's great about the approach is in the interim, he does not have negative thoughts about the salesman, the pushy salesman that called him and demanded a bunch of his time.
Yeah.
And that gets a chance to seep in. And when you reach back out, he's that much more open. Cause like, oh yeah, this is the sales guy I talked to that didn't leave a bad taste in my mouth last time he called. You know, I might as well give him a little bit of time and see what he has to say. And so the coaching point that I'll throw in, this is really for the listeners too. If you're making these cold calls, and you run into the same situation where someone says yes, and they say, all right, call me back at a later time. It is not a bad idea to use a follow-up oriented question to define the time frame. And so, right, is it too soon if I call you back tomorrow afternoon?
Yeah.
Or if you got, let's say, right, because a lot of times you're doing cold calls as a salesperson, you might have a schedule in front of you that's got open slots of time on it. And right, you pick one and say, is it a problem? Would you be against? Would it be impossible if I called you back, you know, next Tuesday at 3:30, right? Yeah. And now you've defined the time frame, which, you know, anytime a salesperson's got a definitive time frame to talk to a counterpart, it's always better for us because we can work around the time, right? As opposed to flying by the seat of our pants like we do a lot of times.
Yeah. So like what I like to do, like I like to keep it simple.
Yeah.
And I was working, like I don't like this like CRM systems, and I use pen paper to jot down whatever like comes up. And then I put the calendar in front of me when I'm working. So I like to keep it like do Excel stuff, and it works for me. And being this like gentle, because I have respect for people. Like I don't, I don't want to waste, like I don't want to waste your time, and they don't want to waste my time.
Yeah.
But of course, like it's a learning process. So even though, it's like when I book a demo of the product I'm selling, I'm like, what just happened there? It went like this. So I'm laughing and like looking myself in the mirror and like, hey, this works. And it cheers me up. So, but I wouldn't have got to this if it hadn't been for reading Chris Voss, your father's book on Never Split the Difference. And of course, Derek Gaunt's.
So I got a follow up question for you, because obviously you're using this stuff and you're getting your repetitions in, and you're using it with a certain amount of success.
Yeah.
And this is hard to articulate. And so I'm warning you ahead of time on this. What have you seen, you know, as far as one to engage in the process and use tactical empathy? How has that assisted the close? So starting off well, you know, setting the intention up front, you know, being a non-intrusive salesperson, which is hard to do if you're in sales at all, right? Has it assisted the closing aspect as well, or not so much? Like how would you categorize it?
I've had like, it's been difficult to close because the product I'm dealing with, it's, because restrictions and so on, it's difficult to, the companies I'm talking with, they're not thinking about it yet. And then we have all these restrictions. So it's difficult to close, to close them, because like, I don't know. I was actually talking with, what's his name? David, he's working with Kemp Systems. David Devadis, or...
Yes. I think that's correct.
Yeah. We had this like free, I had this like free 20 minutes call with him, and I told him I'm selling myself too short, because don't give out the offer. Don't give them too much because I'm supposed to don't like never split the difference. So so it's difficult because like I send out the offers, and when we get to, then it takes time. And then some of them are of course busy because of COVID, and they got more than they can like handle. So, but to answer your questions, it's difficult to close, to get to the closing part, even though like we had I've been presenting, like I did a demo of what the offer I have. So when it comes to closing, it's kind of difficult. You know, it's difficult.
Very good. Now that's great to hear, and I had suspicion that's where you might be going with that. Yeah. What's great though is you have such a solid understanding of the ground that a lot of your counterparts are standing on, even before you reach out, because of COVID, because of bureaucratic red tape. Yeah. Because you know that they're not potentially thinking about the solution that you're offering them. And so I would say what's going to be a huge advantage for you specifically is if you can incorporate that stuff into your accusations audit with them.
Yeah. I've been thinking about this, like, when it comes to, okay, say they're, I'm working with travel safety. That's my, like, and companies, they have to generate money and they have to take care of their people when they're traveling. Mm-hmm. So, and I haven't been painting the picture. I haven't, like, we haven't built vision. I think that's my problem. Like, not the problem, but it's one of the, what do you call, like, hindrances or, yeah, challenges. I think challenge, that's the better word. But then I've been thinking about the acquisition audit. Okay, how can I put this in? Like, how can I put it in? And I was thinking, like, have you been giving up on looking after, like, is your employee safety on travel, isn't it that important? But I don't want to scare them, because it's easy to get into that, like, fall into that pit as well.
Right, exactly. And the accusations audit is tough. And so I'm glad we kind of ended up here. So
yeah.
For those that if you still don't got your mind wrapped around the Norrington question, simply put, are you against? Is it impossible? Would it be ridiculous? In front of basically any yes-oriented question you can think of. If you just change the beginning words to that, it switches it to a no. Another really short example is, instead of asking people, do you agree? You say, do you disagree? Right? So you just do 180 flip on the yes. Now, the accusations audit, to your point, is very difficult.
Yeah.
And the purpose of the audit, right? And people struggle with this. Like, this is probably, of all the skills we teach, this is definitely one of the top two most difficult that people really struggle with. And so, short definition of it is, you are verbalizing all of the negative thoughts that a counterpart has toward you or toward the effort that you're making. And the thing about, one of the reasons, again, why it's so hard to articulate these things is because the thoughts that are swimming around in other people's heads aren't always logical or rational. And when we try to make sense of their thought process, we can drive ourselves crazy, because if there's no rationale, data, or logic behind it, it makes it that much more difficult to articulate. However, some go-tos for you, right? I know this isn't a solution that you're considering right now. And I would imagine that to a certain degree, you're just trying to figure out how to tread water during a pandemic. And then at the very least, the last thing you need is some sales guy wasting a bunch of your time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's much closer to what we would articulate as an accusations audit, because, right, you already know they're not thinking about it, right? You know that coming in the door.
Yeah.
And so, instead of them sitting there going, like, I don't want to hear anymore what this guy says because our company's not even considering this type of solution. You beat them to the punch mentally by going, I know you're not even considering this right now. And now you've essentially diffused that thought from their mind.
Yeah.
Because they look at you and they go, wow, this sales guy, he knows his stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And that's one more check mark in the win column for you, is somebody that can be trusted.
Yeah.
And then stating, right, and I know that the pandemic has probably driven you guys crazy. And you're just trying to figure out how to tread water or stay afloat or whatever wording you want to use, right? There's no way they're not thinking that too.
Yeah.
And then if you want to throw in stuff about budgets and red tape, you know, I'd imagine that you got a whole team you need to answer to. And you know that you can't give me an answer before you speak to them anyway. Right. All those things, these getting out in front of the thoughts, and especially the negative ones that they're already harboring, you technically know what all those are because your experience has, you have such a depth of experience at this point.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I can hear the accusation audit. And I brought up something that Derek taught me it's been this acronym CAVIAR.
Yes.
Curiosity. I had to write it down because, like, curiosity, acceptance, venting, because I want them to tell me, like, hey, we have COVID, we have this here and there. And I just have to sit and listen, and then identification, accusation audit, and remember, like, they're in the same position as me. So that was what he gave me. So
yeah, that's a great point. And to the caviar acronym, right, that we use is all based on getting yourself in the right mindset.
Yeah.
And we actually spell caviar with two A's. So yeah. C-A-V, right, I-A-R. And the AA stands for accusations audit. So, right, that's a paramount piece.
Yeah.
And then the curiosity, I'm so glad you brought curiosity up. We put so much emphasis on curiosity, mostly because maintaining or keeping a lid on our own emotions is probably the most difficult part of negotiation.
Yeah.
And we like to say, like, no matter how good you get, it's something you will struggle with for as long as you talk to other human beings, right? Controlling yourself in the moment when you get triggered, you know, not just reacting to being triggered, right? How do you still stay in the moment and think it through and respond properly? And that's where curiosity fits in so well, because the way human emotion is built mentally, it is very difficult for us to be genuinely curious and angry at the same time.
Mm.
Those emotions are just so far apart, it's really hard to be both at once. And to your point about mentality, if we just focus on staying genuinely curious, we can keep ourselves from tripping over our own anger and messing up as a result.
Yeah. Or as Jocko Willing would say, keep your ego in check.
Yeah, keeping your ego in check, right? There's all kind of cliches out there because it's been a problem since human beings have been on planet Earth.
and I've dealt with it like on a daily basis, more or less. Like some days, maybe I don't deal, but still I have to think about it, consider, okay, who am I? Like, I'm responsible for myself and I have to take full responsibility or extreme ownership, or hard to say it. That's how I'm thinking, and I'm always aware of it. And it's since I learned about this, I feel that I've become a better human person, but still I'm working on it and sharpening, owning the skills and getting the reps in, same as training martial arts. So I remember me and Derek, we were agreeing on, it's like martial arts and
The comparison to martial arts, that's something we use all the time as well. You know, we talk about the Shuhari concept, which you're probably familiar with, right? Japanese martial art concept about levels of experience.
Mm.
And for all intents and purposes, kind of the roadmap from being a novice to being an expert, right? Going through the Shuhari framework, but then the reps, you know, just like anything else, building your verbal communication skills or your emotional intelligence or your tactical empathy, right? Whatever term you want to use. If you don't work out the muscle, the muscle doesn't grow, right? If you don't continue to work on your jiu-jitsu techniques, if you took a 20-year hiatus from jiu-jitsu and then jump back on the mat, in 20 years, you're not going to be as good as you are today because you've gone 20 years without getting any reps in.
Yeah.
And it's the same idea with building your verbal communication. And to your point, if you don't continue to get reps, you will not stay sharp.
Yeah, same as I've been playing guitar for almost 18 years. And there's been times when I haven't been playing for some time because I just needed a break. But then like I start to play again and then I meet up with some friends. But then I have to get back, like go to my room, sit in my room and practice the scales.
Yeah.
Memorizing, okay, play some leads and build up and learn some new phrasing motives and put it into my style of playing and the way I'm playing. Then I can go out and use it because I can't like when I'm playing live, so I can suddenly start to practice while I'm playing.
Yeah. So yeah, it is not riding a bicycle.
So yeah. So that was like, I think it's important. I wrote down some questions, but suddenly we just got into it. And I think there's others who also is working with sales. And what's working for me is the work you're doing with Black Swan Group. And I'm getting inspired there. I know they had this Facebook Live stuff in the beginning of the year.
Yes.
But I signed up for it, and then I catch the first live mm-hmm. that you had. But then I slipped off because I don't remember. I think I was caught up with something else. But still, like, whenever I want to, what I'm using, what's working for me, is the method that I've learned from reading the book, Notes with the Difference, and following the blogs and getting inspired. So that's what I go back to. And I'm,
well, it sounds like you're transforming.
Yeah,
it sounds like it's been transformative for you.
Yeah, it has. And before I learned about it, I remember I was working as a security guard for a company, and mm-hmm. they told me, the boss called, he said, "Hey, there's this job. You might be perfect for it, or you might fit in for it." I was gonna fill in for a woman who she was going on summer holiday.
Mm-hmm.
But she has to see how did I do, like, how could I interact with her. So we started to talk. I told her I've been to India, and she said, like, she loved to hike and go to different countries to just walk. I don't know, like this March walk or whatever they call it. So I was mm-hmm. just asking, I was being curious about her, like asking, where have you been? And so, and we built this like rapport. We were building rapport.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the story was I got a job offer from them, from this company, because they wanted me to work. She wanted me to work and fill in for her whenever she was on vacation. But it didn't go like that because of the other company. They didn't want to lose me. Mm-hmm. That's another story. But still, it's been sort of ingrained. I've always been curious about people. And I can see my daughter, she's the same. She's curious about people.
Yeah.
But then I got to read the book and learn about it. And then I had to work it in. And as we spoke about the occupation audit, I've been trying to, I haven't been focusing too much on that, but it is, like you say, it's a muscle, and I have to add on and get some more reps with the other muscles and the other techniques. So please bring that back to the rest of your team. It's been transformative for me.
That's so good to hear. And I will make it a point to do so. And just to touch on real quick, one of the things that you mentioned, which I think, you know, speaks volumes. When you were speaking with this woman and you were very intentional about being curious, whether it was natural or it was a very conscious mode you had to switch yourself into, either way, you're being very intentional about your curiosity with her. And so the point here that I'm making is any communication, especially communication centered around influence of some sort, people make deals because they feel like it, right? It's not like they've been forced into it by you, or even I actually think it's a bit arrogant to say when we've persuaded someone.
Yeah.
Because then that makes it seem like you put the thought in their head, as opposed to bringing the thoughts that are in their head to the forefront, right? And there's a slight difference between the two.
Yeah.
But again, people make deals because they feel like it. And then it's just a matter of how do we make them feel like making a deal with us? And when you were very intentional about your curiosity, the undertones of the communication were genuine interest.
Yeah, yeah.
And as a result, your counterpart felt it too, and they were compelled to share things with you. And that's that powerful emotional moment, that if you can create that at any point in the conversation, that leads people to agreement and to commitments of all sorts, but they can feel like you're someone they should do business with. Just like this lady felt like sharing things with you were going to be a benefit not only to her, but to you as well.
Yeah.
And so I love, right, the underlying message behind that is, I'm really interested in what you have to say. Please tell me more.
Yeah.
And she received that message without you having to use any of those words.
Yeah.
And it all had to do with mindset and intention. So I think that's a powerful example.
Yeah, it was. And when I was in the situation, I didn't think about, now I'm going to use influence.
That right.
it was more, I'm curious. I've been traveling. You've been seeing other places. I've been seeing places. But then I just wonder, like, she just talked about it. And as we were going, I was just asking, and she was replying. So we made a good connection there. And so it's.
Yeah, you created the proper emotion.
Yeah.
Or for all intents and purposes, the most useful emotion for the conversation that you were having. And I think that's where, in general, we struggle in negotiation. Is because we lose sight of creating the proper environment that will breed influence. We get caught up in what we have to say, our justifications or our data, or we get caught up in wanting to insult the other side because we felt like we got insulted first. And all of those are negative premises that under no circumstances anybody want to give in under. And so the chances of actually coming to an agreement when you've created that sense of emotion are very, very low. But we also have the power to flip the switch, which is exactly what you described.
Yeah. So when it comes to, as we started off talking about, when you built up in you're in the deal, you're about to close, but it's difficult to close. What? Yes. How is it possible to do what you call, like, to repair the damage, or I won't say damage, but there's some sort of, I've been thinking, okay, what can I ask? How should we ask if we're losing them? Is it, I've read that, like, you can ask them, where did we lose you? What went wrong? So what's your approach to that? Like, when you're coaching?
Yeah. Happy to get into it. And this is definitely multifaceted. So please forgive me for being long-winded on this, because to your point about repairing the damage or bringing them back, you know, what the best solution is based on how we got here. And how we got here could be any number of things, right? Did we fail them? Did they fail us? Have we been missing meetings? Are they dealing with red tape? Or did we change our product? Right. It's any number of things that lead to that, which then inform you on the path forward. But simply put, a couple of things. Are you against moving forward? Has been the closing line across the board that every sales team that we've talked to has started to implement and have great success with. Now, again, right, it's no oriented. Are you against? And then the real key is adapting the second half of that question for the moment in hand. So you're selling travel insurance for people's employees. Are you against protecting your employees when they're out doing work on behalf of the company? Are you against making sure your employees are safe in the event that something bad happens? That's really hard. Now, it sounds manipulative because that is such a cornering question. Yeah. It's like, it would be really hard for any entity to go like, screw my employees. I don't care if the plane falls out of the sky and they die on impact, right? It'd be really hard for them to say like, yes, I have no interest in insuring my employees. Yeah. But again, because it's no oriented, it doesn't feel as intrusive as that. And then, of course, tone of voice and the setup with an accusations audit is a great way to do that. And so that's a good closing statement. Are you against making sure your employees are protected? Are you against covering your investment for the manpower that you've put into place, right? So you could shape that in a number of ways. Now, as far as repairing a situation, one thing I'd be really careful of, and I've read this stuff too, being a sales in my past and, you know, been through a lot of training and read a fair amount of sales books. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot of sales stuff that I would say is not as useful as we'd like it to be. I'll put it gently, right? Yeah. Not as useful as we would like.
I love that one.
And one of those things is this, like, where did we lose you thing?
Yeah.
And so there's several reasons for this. And a lot of it has to do with how it's received. And I think the one single thing that the majority of sales training has overlooked is how it's received by the other side, right? It's all focused on how do we get our point across better? And it doesn't take into consideration how it's received. And so when you're talking to somebody who's got a master's degree, PhD, they've been in business for, you know, you're a young guy, I'm a young guy, right? They've been in business for longer than we've been on the planet Earth, right? They see themselves as an extremely intelligent person. When we come at them and go, where did we lose you? It discounts their intelligence.
Yeah.
The undertones of that is you're probably having trouble keeping up because I know this stuff's very complicated and there's a lot to think
about. Overwhelming.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, right, you might be a little stupid. And so just tell me where we lost you and we'll go back and we'll fix your stupidity. And that's how it gets received when a salesperson, that isn't what we intend.
No.
Especially coming from a guy like you, you would never intend to send that message to somebody ever.
Yeah.
That doesn't change the fact, right? Going back to rationale and the crazy stuff that's swimming around between people's ears. When you say that, their interpretation of it is instantly going to be negative.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those phrases that I really caution salespeople on. That one, you know, the what's your budget phrase, that's another one really caution people on. Yes, momentum.
I've used it. Yeah. Yep. I've used
really
it.
Really caution people because it's interpreted so poorly, right? Yeah. And so what's the alternative? Well, if you don't say where we lost you in an effort to get people back on track, then what do you do? And so there's a couple options. The simplest one is to do what we call a label. And a label is a verbal observation of a dynamic or a motivation.
It seems like, sounds
exactly.
Like.
And they start with it seems, it sounds, or it looks like, or it feels like, right? That's another one that we've thrown into the ring. So if you're in that moment, you could easily say something like, you know, just based on the look on their face, right? Because as you got great intuitive senses as a salesperson, you know when these things start to happen. You can feel it in the room. You can see the look and you can see their body language. You can say, it feels like I'm moving too fast. And then they go, actually, can you back up to the last section that we just went over? I got a couple questions for you. Or you could say, it seems like I am failing to be, well, let me see. I was going to say, it seems like I'm failing to be clear, but there's you know, a much more intelligent way. It seems like I'm failing to add the level of clarity necessary. That's right. Like, and then it's like, as a matter of fact, and let's go back. And now you've reset and you've put them in the driver's seat as to where we go next. And you've done it in a completely unintrusive way.
Yeah. But how... Well, this is like... I was thinking, how does this work when it comes to... Well, most of the sales is going through Zoom, Teams, online. And then you have to call them and follow up. And then you have email. So how can... How do we put it into all of the like different, how to say, levels of the other talk you like you've been presenting through an online meeting, and then you have to follow up on an email, and then by text message, because people are busy. So so is there like different? Well, that was a yes question. What are the approaches to all of? To those.
There you go. See, I love to see what you just did right there. And I gotta call time out for a moment because what you just went through mentally is exactly what we all experience
yeah.
when we're first learning to execute this stuff. And you started with a question and you got three words into it and you're immediately like, that's the wrong question. I shouldn't ask it that way for, you know, any number of reasons.
Mm.
And you took a second to think about it and you turned it into a what question.
Yeah.
Like that is actually a really good repetition. Because you went through the process of translating the question in game, which is very difficult to do. That's not an easy thing. And so, first of all, kudos. Nice job rephrasing, right? And so, and it's just, it's also kind of a warning to the audience. Like, you're going to go through that. You're going to be talking to somebody and you're going to start to say the wrong thing. And it's perfectly fine to stop and rephrase. Because if you rephrase it even better, whoever you're talking to is going to really appreciate it. Like I do. I really appreciate the effort that you put in to be very clear and very precise. And so, you know, that comes through in your communication as well. Again, intention, mindset. So to go back to the question, right? What you originally asked in the first place.
Yeah.
And so I'll say it like this. The classic negotiator's answer is that it depends. Mm. However, I'm going to try to add some framework to it, especially in this age of we're in the pandemic and there's a lot of more communication done through email or text or just virtual, like what we're doing right yeah. now, right?
Yeah.
And so the first thing is any written communication, you have to keep short.
Yeah.
You know, we got an email process that we talk about. We say, never go more than 8 sentences. Try to limit yourself to 5 sentences or less. And then the other part of that is we throw in what we like to call email softeners. So after you've written the email, read the email back to yourself in the worst possible tone of voice you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And why do we say that? Well, because we cannot dictate or predict the mood that the reader yeah. is in when they read our email,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, without proper parameters, the tone of the email takes on the current mood of the reader.
Yeah.
And so if they're pissed off,
yeah.
your email is going to sound pissed off
yeah.
through no fault of your own. And so this one actually, this reading out loud is loud and angry in the worst possible voice. I first heard that from Stuart Diamond, who's wrote several books. Getting More is one of them. He's a Wharton professor on negotiation. I love the guy. I love his podcast. And I actually got that from him. And then after you've read it out loud in a terrible voice, go back in and plug in I'm sorry's and I'm afraid's in as many places as it'll fit. We actually refer to that as email softeners.
Okay.
Because no matter how mad the person is on the other end, if they read like, I'm sorry to bother you with this.
Yeah.
I know it feels like I'm dropping a ton of bricks on your shoulders. I'm afraid if we don't solve this, you're leaving your employees at a disadvantage, right? You're leaving your employees at great risk while they travel, right? Whatever it is.
Mm.
And then close it with an oriented question. Is it impossible to set up some time to discuss how to protect your employees?
Mm.
Right? And now you're under 5 sentences. So that's one of the things, right? Mm. Keeping things short, because the other part, we're, as salespeople, we're constantly fighting the uphill battle of the last salesperson they talked to probably made them really angry,
mm.
right? There's a really yeah. good chance. If it wasn't the last person they talked to, it was the salesperson before that.
Yeah.
You know, we can guarantee one of the last two people really left a bad taste in their mouth. So even if it's we're not them, we're still fighting that, what's the word I'm looking for? That judgment call. Right, yeah. that viewpoint, yeah. even if we didn't originally create it. And so the other aspect that goes along with this, human beings do not like to read long emails. We none of us do. However, no. we are also all guilty of writing long emails, even yep. though none of us yeah. like to read them, right? It's, yeah. it's like, yeah. it's the ultimate act of hypocrisy, I think, across the human race. And so, but how does that tie in as a salesperson? Well, if we know that people don't like reading long emails in general, and then we're fighting the uphill battle of being a salesperson, if you get a long email from a salesperson, how likely are you to read it? Pr- probably not that high on your priority list.
No.
And so some of it is conditioning them that I am a salesperson that's not only here to help you and provide you with a product or service that you might not even ever considered before, I am never going to waste your time doing it. Mm. And that starts with the email communication, especially if that's the main medium during a time like the pandemic. And so some of it is, are we conditioning them to react and deal with us in a positive way? And with a business owner or any corporate entity, that number one thing starts with not having their time wasted.
Mm. Beautiful. Man, yeah. That's so enlightening. Yeah.
I could talk about this all day, man. I could keep you on. We could do a 12-hour podcast if you want, but eventually your listeners will get tired of me and start putting bad stuff on social media about it.
I think before we started, I decided, okay, I want to talk about how to put this into sales, and it touched it perfectly. More than perfectly. It was wonderful.
Good, man.
Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. This has been a lot of fun. I'm glad you wanted me on, and we got a track record with you, right? Because you had Derek last year.
Yeah.
So now we gotta get who's gonna be the instructor next year, right? That's what we gotta figure out. But no, this was so much fun, man.
I'm thinking it would be cool to get, what's her name? I think was it Sandy?
Sandy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
You know what? I'm glad you said that. I will put a good word in with the team to get Sandy on your podcast. I think that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, that would be good to have it from a woman's perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. She definitely adds depth to the thought process simply because she's a woman. And that is the truth. Yeah, man.
Beautiful. So wrapping up, where can I will of course put out the links to the Black Swan, and if people want to follow up on what you're doing with the Black Swan or in general, where do they go to?
So several things here, a couple things. The easiest and probably most beneficial is simply going to be our website, which is just Black Swan, like our company name, LTD, right? The abbreviation for limited.com. Mm. And if you've never visited our website before, you'll instantly be prompted to sign up for our newsletter that you mentioned earlier in our call today. And I would highly recommend signing up for the newsletter. It's free. And it's actually, the content is actually very much driven by our subscriber list. Mm. We reach out to our fans and we say, what do you want to know more about? You know, would you have a problem if we wrote an article about this? And we get direct feedback from them, and that very much drives how we write our articles. So the content is designed not to just be this thing that's going to bore you. It's actually designed to make it better every time you read it. And it's a free resource, so that's a great one. info@blackswanltd.com. That's a simple email address. You can email anything to that address and get the answers quick, fast, and in a hurry, whether it's in regards to training or other social groups that we're doing. We actually have a social group on LinkedIn called the Black Swanlings, and that's run by an affiliate of ours, a guy by the name of Michael Busoletto, who I've known for a while now. And he's not a direct partner, direct employee of Black Swan, but he's somebody who really believes in what we do. And we've kind of teamed up with him in our social media efforts. And so he actually runs that group on LinkedIn, the Black Swanlings, and he's he does role plays. He makes it a point to get people networked up so they can practice with each other offline. He's constantly feeding the group on ideas and different thoughts. And in addition to that, we have a subscription-based Facebook group called the Next Level Negotiators. And I think it's, you know, it's $20 a month or something, the way the subscription works. But it's the reason I love it is everyone that came from the challenges, right? The challenge you were part of. Those were the first groups we offered the Next Level Negotiators to. And then we opened it up to kind of the general public. And so needless to say, there's a lot of high level people in the Next Level Negotiators group. and there are conversations. I mean, it's probably every couple hours, there's some intense negotiation, term, point, objective that's being discussed on that group. And we feed into it too, right? We feed both groups as instructors, but especially next level negotiators. Those are such high performing people that they're constantly leaning on each other as far as process and agenda and, you know, scheduling out how they do their negotiations, which is actually a lot of fun, right? Because they're learning so much from each other. And those are really kind of the big ones that I like to lean on.
I'm going to publish that and let the rest of the listeners know about it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah, that would be much appreciated.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, man. So, we want to get in touch with your people, man. We want to continue to serve them if we can.
Yeah, I was thinking like how many, I don't know, I'm not sure how many Norwegians have heard about the Black Swan or the Nurse with the Difference. I'm not quite sure. That was a question. Right. Yeah, I've seen. I don't know. At least I've heard about it. So,
yeah, clearly you know. Yeah, you know so know. Well. You're out there cutting deals using this stuff anyway.
Yeah. Oh, I want to say thank you so much, Brendan, for getting on and joining.
The pleasure was mine, man. I really enjoyed the conversation with you today, and I'm honored you wanted me as part of your show, man. Thank you.
I'm honored as well to have you here.